I'm Kate Daniels. Foster care is a critically important means of supporting children of varying ages going through traumatic life circumstances. And it really needs care, attention, and more awareness. We get some insight from the authors of Forgotten Baby, Nicole and Arthur. Nicole Linnea and Arthur Romeo, good morning. Thank you so greatly for being here with us today.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having us, Ms. Daniels.
You're welcome. Kate.
All right.
Well, you know, this it's really wonderful to have an opportunity to discuss what is a really great book, a great piece of art, Forgotten Baby. But the thing is, the underlying subject material is a bit heart-wrenching and is a tough but very important subject in our society, and that is foster care. And so on the positive side, it's good to be having this as an opportunity to bring this subject, this whole area, to light in the form of a book, and to have you both who have that connection to discuss it, so that, you know, I think the goal is to bring awareness and to find solutions and make things better in our world. Would you say?
It's not only that. The thing is, like, the kids that go through this, which is thousands and thousands of them, rarely have anything that tells their story, you know? So along with, like, getting other people to, like, get more information or really understand what's happening, you have these kids that go through this thing that never really get their story told, you know? And that's one of the beautiful things about this era of storytelling, that the inclusivity is happening all across so many barriers, whether it's your race, whether it's your gender, whether it's a particular situation that's not really covered often. You're starting to see all of these stories come about, and you need it in the format of a children's story a lot of times, because you want young people to learn about these things. You want young people to see themselves. You know, it's really important and vital.
Agreed. Actually, in terms of being a children's book, I have a real love of children's books. And in another lifetime, sort of, I was doing storytelling where I used children's material. The thing is, the whole subject matter is there, but anyone of any age can get so much out of it. So I think it's just a really perfect medium.
Yes, we definitely agree with that. I was speaking to Arthur and some of our colleagues the other day and explaining to them that it doesn't matter what background you're from. I've had adults who haven't been associated with the foster care system contact me crying, saying, like, it really touched them. It just really resonated with them, because at the end of the day, if you have some sort of compassion, you're going to care about this little girl and what she's experiencing and not knowing where her mother is. And it's just a very beautiful story. And Arthur, I think with the illustrations, I think it just really makes it come to life. Because if you just see the words, that's one thing. I'm not saying that the words don't make an impact, but once you have those visuals and you really see the emotion come through on the page, it just makes it, like he said, a happy medium with it being a children's book. It allows for multiple ages, multiple cultures and ethnicities to be able to relate to the story that it's foster care. What, it's 153 million children in foster care worldwide. That's an astounding number, you know? So it's just something where we can relate, but in a maybe vulnerable, delicate space, with it being in a children's setting.
Oh, yes.
An important, well, in a children's setting, because it is affecting children. So if they can read that story in a book that is more at their level, I think they can identify in some shape or form to it. So I think, again, while it's important for adults, but the children, they can see themselves. That's the critical thing here too, isn't it?
True, true. Yes. I went through the foster care system, and it was difficult illustrating this and coming up with a story for this, because how do you tell this sort of intense story in a way that's palatable? You know, we're not trying to traumatize anybody. I mean, I did a reading once, and a kid out loud, probably 7 years old, said, "This is making me sad." You know, and it's just like, we shouldn't shy away from feelings like that. It's a real thing. Why shouldn't you be sad for this character? Just like you're sad for, like, Ariel, you know, losing her voice or something like that. But this is such a real world thing that we don't shine a light on, that it's kind of a different sad. It's like, this is more real. And that's how important this thing is. We need to improve these situations for just not just foster kids, just kids all around the world. But in this case, we are talking specifically about the foster care situation. You know, it's a difficult thing to go through. It was difficult to draw some of the emotional scenes in the book, you know, because I went through a lot of it and I've seen other kids go through worse.
And I understand just from the short bio that I read about you, Arthur, it was a good portion of your life through multiple foster care homes, true?
Yes. Lived in over 20 homes for over 10 years. And just going back and forth from group homes and different foster parents and detention centers. It was a very harrowing experience, you know, and I heard stories, you know, going through these situations, you're there with other kids and you hear their stories. I had it a bit better, I would say, than a lot of other kids because I had a strong constitution starting off. I was an early reader and I had a penchant for creativity. So a lot of kids don't have that outlet. And some kids, they're so pained. Something like an outlet just seems absurd. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they lean more into, you know, whether it's drugs, alcohol, chaos, you know, especially if they find other people that engage in that too. And that's why we're trying to have all of these different things to bring them back. You got to bring them back, you know?
Yes.
I mean, recently we have this pandemic. We're seeing the effects of all of this overwhelming stuff happening to our children just through the pandemic, just through drugs, bullying at school. You got all these kids hurting themselves, killing themselves in some cases, you know, doing all sorts of wild stuff, you know?
Yes.
We have to be a beacon of light in these situations to help these young people.
We do. And I'm going to, all of that is so much a part of it. And I just want to add in too that living in the Seattle area where we see a very large homeless population or an unhoused population, a lot of whom are youth. And I've become aware of how many are coming out of foster care situations. Yep. The situations there are so neglectful or so dire that living on the street is better. So that is a part of it too that I think we need to incorporate in this as we try to move forward and bring awareness and raise a solution.
So that's one of the things we go in the book. I want Nicole to speak on this for a second. But in the book, we specifically have a situation where we show that there are good foster parents out there, and which eventually leads to adoption, you know, and that's the case in reality. We have some. I mean, I honestly had one really good foster parent out of that whole situation. At the group homes, there's a lot of good people there too, but it's just like, there's no specific focus and attention on you. And that leaves you feeling it kind of way. But Nicole, I wanted you to speak on the family situation in the book.
Yeah, so my say, even though it's kind of open for interpretation in the first book, she is of an ethnic background. So her mother looks like she can be African-American or some sort of Hispanic. And then the family that adopts her appears to be Caucasian. So they're in the crowd and they're just all excited for her. She has a mother, a father, and a little brother as her new foster family. And they are cheering her on when she's on stage performing. And they come behind stage and they really just, you know, show her love. And she's so excited, you know, for them to be there for her, even though she thinks about her mother being, you know, she leaves a lily for her in a chair, thinking of still remembering her mother, still loving her mother, even though at this moment she doesn't know where her mother is. Where did she go to? I think why that us, you know, diversifying the ethnicities, it was really important because that is what a lot of, you know, the foster and adoption situations are made of, the components are made of. There's a lot of interracial adopting, and these children have to adapt to these different environments. Once they are adopted, they have to adapt to the family and the household that they're in, as well as the neighborhood, different schools, everything that comes along with being adopted by a completely different family that is not yours. And like Arthur said, he went to what, 20 different homes throughout 10 years. And he only to this day has only mentioned one foster parent making an invaluable impact on him. And I'm not saying that, you know, there were no other positive experiences anywhere else, but I think a lot of the feelings are that attention is not really given to that adopted child the same way that maybe the biological children who grew up in that household initially are receiving. And how I can personally relate to, and why this is also very important to me, is I have my daughter, she will be 17 years old this month. Her name is Zamira, and I've had her for 8 years now. And even though it came from a previous relationship, she is mine now. She's my child. I raise her. I contribute to everything from her financial to her education to her learning about herself as a young lady, from her coming from different backgrounds, very traumatic backgrounds, from her biological mother to her biological father, and having to tear down those barriers and those emotional traumas. It's not simple. You know, you're taking a child that you did not fully be able to develop from the beginning, right? Along with all the peer pressures and everything that already comes along from the outside world, I got a child that already kind of had some habits, right? Some development that was already there that may not have been healthy. And I think that's something that is very important to us. And I hope I am following up to what Arthur was trying to, the point that you were trying to make here about the diversification and the bringing together interracial families when you are adopting. Even if we're both African-American, me and my child, but she came from a different culture than me, a completely different upbringing, different expectations, different morals and values. And those are also things that have to be shaped, not just from the color of our skin.
And that's actually a tension, isn't it? Sorry, Arthur, just a tension when, you know, wanting to overcome that, where that child is torn. You know, they're still holding to the old, but they love the new, and then they feel that maybe they're being disloyal. Very complicated. So go ahead, Arthur.
I was just saying, first of all, Nicole is a wonderful mother. You know, I watched firsthand all these years, like what she does for that young person. And I've seen the difference in her as she spent all this time. Like, when she was younger, she had a little bit of bad behavior, you know? I mean, and that's, you know, regular of other children, but something happens when you're displaced from a home. Yeah. You know, the thing that happens with kids is crazy, because we're always adapting to our situation, right? So if a kid is in a traumatic situation, you only live your childhood once. So if that traumatic things happen, that just is normalized. Oh, that's just a thing that happens when you grow up as a child. And then when you come across kids who maybe had more of a calmer situation, they're surprised that they didn't go through what they went through. You mean you didn't experience this, like this person hitting you? You mean you didn't experience this person touching you? You mean you didn't experience, like, but that's what happens. So it causes you to act out in all kinds of ways, you know? Yes. So, but with this girl's presence with Nicole and the way she's growing up, the last time I saw her, she's just beautiful, well-spoken, thoughtful, just lovely, lovely person. And when it comes to what Nicole is, like how important it is for what she's doing for a child, I can't say if that's a rare thing, because there's all sorts of different parenting styles. If you're just thinking like a regular nuclear family, you'll find, like, you know, when there's a middle child, an older child, and a younger child, you find these different dynamics. You know, the middle child like winds up kind of being passed around a little. A lot of more focus is on the smaller child, or whatever. So you have these sort of dynamics that happen in a regular situation. So then you flip that. A kid is coming into the house as a new person. You don't know what their background is, and maybe something goes missing in the house. You know, mm-hmm. Now whether that kid did it or not, it'll be a situation where it's assumed that kid did it. Mm-hmm. How do you react to that? So in all these different situations, you have people, you know, the parents who's supposed to be in charge of the situation, they don't know how to deal with that situation. Oftentimes, they get rid of the kid. So that's something that happens. Then you wind up on this shuffle, going to this place and this place, when it might have been one of their actual kids that stole the thing and blamed it on another kid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's something that happened to me a bunch of times. I'd be get blamed for stuff, you know, like they would believe the police would believe the foster parent over me just by default. You're putting a kid in a situation. I don't know. I feel like Generation X kids and millennial kids, like maybe like a little on a tougher side when it comes to how we dealt with things back in the day. Because we live in a more sensitive time, to where these things are just becoming so overwhelming for these younger people. Mm-hmm. You know, I honestly don't know how I survived my childhood. I don't know how.
Well, listening to you, it feels crushing to, you know, when you give that particular scenario of being blamed for something you didn't do. You're so innocent. Mm-hmm. But no one believes you, and you get shuffled along. You know, mm-hmm. It is amazing that you survived and survived so well that you are this artist now, Arthur.
I mean, it's resiliency, mm-hmm. and you know, it's, I think it's a high like commodity, mm-hmm. because you got so many different types of people. You have some person where a ball will hit them and bounce off, and they don't notice it. And then you have people where a ball hits them and they fall down and die, mm-hmm. you know? And then you have all sorts of people from high and low in between that spectrum, mm-hmm. you know?
Yes. Some might catch the ball and throw it back at you.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes, you know? Exactly.
There was an old figure from a couple of decades back. It's 18,000 kids go homeless in California every year when they're emancipated. I don't know what the figure now is, but I imagine it's either around the same or probably a little bit more, or maybe a little less, because there's been a lot more programs. We do a lot of different functions and events for foster care, and I definitely see stuff that I didn't have when I was younger.
Like in a positive way?
Yes. They have events like so they have independent living programs. They've had them when I was younger, and I'm sure they've only made those better. The conditions were for when I was younger is that you had to do well in school. But I just think that's unfair, because you have kids again. Like, I mean, I deal with my own kid. My kid dealt with the pandemic and a bunch of different bullying. You're trying to give them this worksheet. Here's a science work to do. And they're looking at the science work. It's like, what is this? Like, this is, I don't even understand this. Like, don't you know, like, I'm about to get my head beat in at school? Yeah. And you have to provide an environment for them where they can just focus on their work and not focus on getting hurt by somebody.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know?
So, Nicole, you're having this vision that you wanted to bring this whole situation of foster care, of children being shuffled around like this, not being even treated humane as a human being. So you saw this happening and you felt this need that you could then, in writing, by providing this children's book, bring our attention to it and bring more of the attention so we can do something positive, right?
I hope so. And even like with the work that we do together, and I've met so many wonderful people who do focus on foster children, individuals who are homeless, abused and trafficked women and children. It just doesn't seem like it's enough. And that's what the scary part is, because when you really talk about the numbers that are actually facing these obstacles, it just doesn't seem like it's enough. You feel like all the funding and support are going to, and I'm not saying that they're not important issues, whether it's homelessness, immigration, what else, Arthur? Like there's many other important
trans issues, you know, things like that. Like, mm-hmm. you know, people getting hurt, people getting killed, especially Black trans, you know.
Yeah. So all of those issues, they're definitely important, but you're talking about a child, right? The children are supposed to be our future, and these children are going without families, safe spaces, homes, clothing on their back. They're being abused in these foster agencies. They're, you know, let's say that they're only, like, they get taken from their family, put into the foster, you know, like, go through the system. Like, so that means going from social services, they're dealing with the police officers, and then they're potentially going to some sort of home, right? whether they're even in there for a couple of weeks before someone is able to get court appointed custody of them. Do you know how much can happen to them in just that short amount of time? It's just crazy. And the whole time they're confused, they're scared, they're missing their families. They don't know what's going to happen to them tomorrow. And then even it, once they are placed in their new environment, they're treated like baggage. They're treated like luggage. They can be easily discarded if they do not serve that family or, you know, or that environment well. They are not considered a permanent part of that, you know what I mean, of that family, of that household. They are still temporary until they are made temporary. And it's just such a scary, unstable situation. So when I say that it's, I just don't feel like enough is happening. Yes, like we hope that teaming up together, that we would be able to bring more awareness. We would be able to do more with our time. Like I've gone to various foster agencies. I've been to women's shelters. So these women, their children had at some point been in foster, you know, foster care, and maybe they got them back. Because when they're being abused, they're being accused by their tormentor that they're an unfit mother, that they're on drugs, that they're prostituting themselves. So they get their child taken away from them, from, you know, from lies as well, whether they're doing it too for survival. But there's many times that they are being wrongfully accused. So it's just a very scary, unstable environment that makes you feel like, are we giving them enough resources? And what more can we do to put more emphasis and focus on the foster care system and adoption system?
So I did want to speak positively about some of the things. So for instance, just that school, that group home inviting us there to talk to those young boys. Now yes. Nicole, you saw firsthand the type of how those boys were at yes. that group home.
And they had their guards up so much, Kate, like they were up when we got there. They did, they had attitude and all of that, but go ahead, Arthur, yeah.
Well, yeah. So but it was good that we went there because, yeah. you know, I was former foster care. Mm-hmm. I do voiceover in cartoons and things like that. So I'm on TV often. So situations like that can seem so hopeless. And you want inspiration, but you want inspiration that is not hokey. You know, kids, they're smart. They know when they're being preached to and things like that. And it's like they want something that's real.
Right.
You know, so it was good for me to actually know exactly where they're coming from and speak to them. And we were mm-hmm. able to get through to them.
We were.
Now, I was able to. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I was able to go to college because of the foster care system. I went to Prairie View A&M University. I mean, I need to be grateful that I'm able to do that. Was mm-hmm. it perfect? It definitely wasn't perfect. Like I only had funding till I was 21. What if I wanted to be a doctor? Mm-hmm. You know? So like I only had funding for a certain amount of time, but like I have to be grateful for that. Since then, I've been able to go to some foster care situations. Like they have a specific thing for young foster children that want to do filmmaking and stuff. So I was able to go to this workshop and talk to them, you know, mm-hmm. being somebody that works in the industry to give even more inspiration. So I also spoke at a college at Riverside, UCR. They have a specific program that accepts foster children into that college. And I've never seen anything like that before. Mm-hmm. So there's all these things that are happening, you know, mm-hmm. but I mean, we're always going to need revision in this situation because it's not like there's a perfect, but it's not like we're going to be perfect in doing these things, but we have to always try to be approaching that, mm-hmm. you know, and not leaving these kids by the wayside, not being in a situation where we don't understand what they're doing, not being in a situation where it's like, oh no, they did that one thing. I can't deal with them. We need to understand what our actions, the weight of our actions have on these young people.
And
you know?
And Nicole, you're doing some of that too with the writing. Aren't you somehow getting children involved in some of the future books?
Yeah, so the goal is like what we started with so far is at our events, Arthur does creative writing workshops.
Okay.
That's just the beginning, but the goal is for us to establish some sort of scholarship program where we allow for them to, you know, submit some piece of work, whether it's writing or illustration. And then once they're chosen for the scholarship, we give them a financial stipend, but we also give them an opportunity to become co-authors within the Forgotten Baby series. So that is the goal. We haven't got there yet, but that's because I just think it's just been so much going on. But that is something that's very important to us to start creating more authors, more children who are becoming young authors. So that is something that we're working on in the very near future.
So both of you are really so critical to making a change, spearheading this. And the book, certainly, Forgotten Baby, is a beginning and you're working on future books, but you also have your foundation so that people are able to support and contribute and, of course, learn more and see how we can participate.
Yeah, so Dream North Foundation, we've been established since 2021. We've been doing activism since, 2015, 16, I'm sure before then. But we produce literary arts events. We've been in Nevada, California, Oregon, and the Bahamas. So we've served more than 1,500 so far throughout those areas. We also have an after-school program. It's a culinary arts entrepreneurship program in Los Angeles, sponsored by Supervisor Holly J. Mitchell. So for now, our goal is to sell the Forgotten Baby book. So all of the proceeds, Forgotten Baby is available on Amazon. All those proceeds go to our nonprofit programming. And then, of course, we welcome donations and sponsorships to Dream North Foundation.
And your website or your Instagram connection, Arthur, is...
Oh, it's Dreamboat82. So that there you can see all of my daily happenings, whether it's my voiceover, my artwork, me having fun with my daughter, you know, me connecting with fans of mine for the multiple cartoons, animation series that I'm part of. Also on my website, www.arthurromeo, and you can also see more of me there.
Yay. Well, Nicole, I am just so grateful to you as well, Arthur. But you were the one to start with the vision, I think, Nicole. Just seeing the need that's there and bringing our attention to it and encouraging us, inviting us all to help in whatever way we can. And to, I think for the 1,500 young individuals that you have helped so far, it makes a difference in their life. And then that's a ripple out effect. But there is still so much work to do.
Yes. Yeah. It's been amazing. And we're very appreciative of all the support and the accolades and recognitions that we've received. And it's all very humbling. It definitely is one of those reminders that, yeah, like you said, there's so much more work to do. And that's what me and Arthur, I think I'm very grateful that God blessed me with someone like him, that even he pushes my, like he says, like, you know, I kind of have like a, I don't want to say like serious demeanor, but I'm like, he's the more jovial and silly one. And I'm the one who's a little bit more laid back and calm. And he pushes me to smile. He pushes me to push past all the hard parts sometimes, you know, and just have fun. So I think we're a very great team. And I think that we're going to make a lot of great impact.
Well, I feel you're already doing that. And I'm grateful because I believe that everything that happens is a part of us and we're part of everything else. So everything that you're doing is really making a difference in all of our world. And my hope, my dream is that we all connect with that and embrace that and support your work and get your own copy of Forgotten Baby.
I just want to speak about my foster parent, Elsie Mae Jordan. She's not here anymore. I lived there 3.5 years. And it was a place where that was provided structure for me, just like, you know, a family dynamic with people that are still my family today. You know, my cousins, Charles, Tisha, Kevin, Jason. Jason's not with us anymore. Uncle Sam, Aunt Fern, Aunt Valerie, all my aunts. It's just like a huge family that I've been part of all these years that extended to even the neighbors. Like one of my best friends, Marco, his brother, Greg, his brother, James. Their parents, Eva and Earl, like, you know, it's an extended family. And I'm grateful for that. And that's what I want for every young child to be able to have. You know, it's hard to get it. It's hard to get it. I was in homes like where they had too many kids there. Like police would drop us off at a home where there's like over 8 children in a house that has like 3 bedrooms, you know, and that was completely fine for them to do. Oh, we'll just drop them off here. I want that for every child, whether you're a foster kid or not, but definitely if you're a foster kid, you should have a beautiful time in your childhood, you know?
Agreed. Yes, we're all on the same page about that. I'm glad that you had at least that one family situation, Arthur, that has provided you with the basis to give your daughter a really good home. And that together with Nicole, you've created this other family, this artistic family. And again, I am so grateful to both of you for doing this work, bringing the spotlight to the need that we have in our world on foster care and the needs of these children who, you know, sometimes are treated as disposable. We don't want that to happen. We want them to have loving homes. So thank you for the work that you are both doing.
Thank you.
Thank you for this platform. I mean, and this is the work that it's going to take to really get this stuff out there. So I appreciate you being part of that. And always thank you to Nicole. Like, you know, I'll let you know how much I love you.
Thank you.